Hello everyone. Thanks for being so prompt. Today is Wednesday, April 19th, 2017. This is a regular public facilities committee meeting where we are taking up the city budget primarily. We also will be taking up one item that also is a public buildings item at the end of our budget discussion. So everyone have their budget books in their CIPs, looks like it. I'll read the three items into the record. First is item 113-17. Oops, I'm going to take that last. Item 359-16 is to honor the mayor submitting the fiscal year 2018 to 2022 capital improvement plan pursuant to section 5-3 of the Newton City Charter. And item 359-16 plan 2 is to honor the mayor submitting in accordance with section 5-1 of the city Newton Charter the FY18 municipal school operating budget totaling $395,213,737. Passage of which shall be concurrent with the FY18 and FY22 capital improvement program. And finally, item number 359-16, paren 4, is in honor of the mayor submitting the FY18 through FY22 supplemental capital improvement plan. So, we are joined, of course, by Commissioner Josh Morse of the Public Buildings Department, and the meeting is yours.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming out. I am going to go through, it's going to be a project update, if you will, because most of my outcomes are based on our project. I'll highlight a couple changes in our budget. Most of it is fairly straightforward, very similar to last year. We had to make an increase in the school water line item, school and city water line item, just based on consumption. The consumption of water has increased. At the same time, we're working on a number of mitigation efforts to try to bring that number back down. Similar to our building management systems, where we can remotely monitor and control water use, Parks and Rec is installing systems that will allow them to do the same thing. So the days of driving by East North High School and seeing irrigation while it's raining should be gone.
I'm going to ask you to pause for just a minute.
Sure.
I forgot to introduce the committee now that we're all here. I'm going to do that just for the record. But then I'm going to ask if you could sort of outline what you're going to talk about so that we kind of know where you are in the discussion as you do it. So starting with water, just really enough up. Maybe we could do an overview of what you're going to talk about, what you're planning to talk about.
Okay.
I'm Jeff Crossley, chair of the committee and counselor from Ward 5. To my left is Susan Albright, vice chair of the committee, counselor from Ward 2. Mark Laredo, counselor from Ward 7, Robert Rochelle Fraser, ward counselor from Ward 3. Scott Lennon, president and counselor at large from Ward 1. Lenny Gentile, counselor at large from Ward 4. Vicki Danberg, counselor at large from Ward 6, Carol Lappin, ward counselor from Ward 1, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. We have also...
Oh, I did?
I'm sorry.
I'll tell the man that we're all the
same. Ward counselor
from Ward 2. I'm for all of the cities.
That's our committee. And we are also joined by counselor Louis Angelo, at large from Ward 4.
With boundaries for this one.
I'm passing those along and they can't find that guy. My goodness. Thank you very much.
Right over here.
Would you please begin by sort of outlining what you're going to talk about in more begin?
Sure.
Because I know we can get into any one of these particular
Yep, so what I was going to do, because I think the budget itself is fairly similar to last year, I was going to highlight the two areas that are what I would consider significant changes, one being the water and the other being an additional FTE for a custodian. Then I was going to go into Angel Service Cabot, Fire Station 3 Headquarters, Aquinas, Student South High School, Mondo Floors, DPW Walk Day, the library project, Car School Air Conditioning Project, our solar initiative, and then the Crescent Street Project.
That's all.
And then I was just going to open it up to Q&A.
We've had this for less than 24 hours, so I don't know that everyone's been able to do a whole lot of study in that time period.
Not going to be
Is there the only two changes to the CIP that affect public buildings are the two you just mentioned?
To the budget or to the CIP?
Yeah, that was the budget. Okay, we're also going to talk
about
the CIP.
Correct. Okay. So some of what I just rattled off very quickly are, one is in the supplemental, and others are a few what I would call infrastructure projects that are coming up this next fiscal year.
Okay, just tell us which one is in the supplemental.
The library.
So,
$500,000 for the renovations at the library.
Okay, thank you, because Maureen informed me anyway that there is no separate supplemental book this year built into
So that I can do the statistics on page six of my budget line item 5230 under expenses. This is water and sewer service.
Mm-hmm.
Previous fiscal year, the budget was $625,000.
Okay.
Page six. We have increased that to $675,000, so a $50,000 increase.
Public buildings, page six.
So is that what the water schools mean?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering what water schools were. And so the schools are not paying for water use out of their own
boat? No, we took, so 3 years back, I want to say, we took all of the water, essentially funds at that time and put it into my budget. So we had one department paying all the water bills. It's not that suddenly the city started paying the school department's water bills. They took, essentially reduced their bottom line number by whatever, I think it was probably $400,000 at that point, and put it into my budget. And to be quite frank, the number one area that we're looking at is Duke North High School. The water consumption over there has been quite high. And last summer, we had quite a drought. I think a lot of it has to do with that. And those fields, if you don't water them, they brown out very, very quickly.
I thought we were using captured water to irrigate
the field. We are. That tank can only water for one day. That's how much water is consumed over there.
Okay.
So if it rains every day, we're good. If it doesn't, like last summer, that doesn't get you much. So it's supplemented by city, by NWRA water, which we then have to pay for. So not only are we looking at a water management and irrigation management system, but we are also working, Bob DeRubis is obtaining prices to drill additional wells over there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's you know, you might get one out of every two you drill, and they're $15,000 to $16,000 a pop. But Newton North High School is, you know, $300,000 annually in water consumption. Mm-hmm. It's getting up there. So it's money well spent.
We're also putting fluoridated drinking water on the lawn.
Yeah.
Well, it's potable water is what we
want. So I'm sorry, because so it costs $15,000 just to drill, and you're not sure if you're going to get anything.
Correct. It's a 50-50 shot whether you're going to get something. But it's pretty light. Yeah, exactly. You're pretty much guaranteed you're going to get about 8 gallons a minute, which is very low. What we'd like to see is 20 to 24 gallons a minute. So, you know, if you drill two, you might get one with 8, one with 12. That's kind of what we're looking at.
How far down do you have to go to get that?
We normally go to 500 feet is what they're after. Anything beyond that, it's diminishing returns as far as cost. Sometimes you can go significantly less because there's a lot of shallow water over there. So.
Does it need to be fracked if it's at 8 gallons a minute to bring it up? Or
We're not fracking.
I
don't see employees very long.
I always thought diving, you know, those divining rods where they kind of...
And then the other one, let me just see exactly where it is, but we increased our FTEs by one. We're hiring an additional custodian Do you want me to point it out or just explain
it? Sure.
Okay. So basically what we have is, as many folks are aware, the Fire Station 3 headquarters project is coming online. That building is 32,000 square feet, much larger, and it's going to be used much more than the previous facility. At the same time, we have a number of facilities in the city. We have 55 municipal buildings, and only one, two, three, four, five of them actually have custodial cleaning. The rest of it is done either through overtime or by people on light limited duty. Every year I do an analysis of whether or not it makes sense to continue to pay overtime versus hiring additional FTE when counting in OPEB and everything else. We finally hit that tipping point where we're spending a great deal of money in overtime to keep up our other buildings, and at this point it made more sense to hire another FTE at approximately $40,000 to get them in here so that this position will be a floating custodian position, something we haven't had in the past, but they will be able to take care of buildings like the fire station project, like our park and rec buildings, our DPW facilities, public buildings, and they can assist with the senior services and the senior center. And then they can subsidize if we have something come up either here over at the main library or at the police building. For instance, the toilet stuff or something significant that we don't want to take away our day-to-day custodian for an extended period of time on.
Can you name the buildings where you put full-time custodians?
Sure. City Hall, the main library, and then police. Police has one custodian that handles the headquarters, police garage, and police annex.
And the fire stations don't have?
Fire stations are cleaned by the firemen, but fire headquarters, the new DOC, the operating officer, that whole wing, the connector, is not something that would be cleaned by the firemen. Oh, I'm sorry.
Alright,
so I'm just going to transition and I'll just go.
So is the money for the extra custodian coming primarily out of overtime?
Yes.
Okay, so it's more of a transfer of funds?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And it gets a little complicated when you look at that, just to be quite honest, because what we've done is with a lot of the parks buildings, they used to contract out their cleaning services. So the numbers that you actually see in here might be a little fuzzy because what happens is Park and Rec had a budget line item for a contract cleaning. They weren't happy with the quality of service they were getting. We found out that we could do twice the work for the same amount of money using overtime. So some of it is transfer billed via department. So what you may see in this is that the reduction in the overtime may not account for the full amount of the salary, but if you look at all the other departments, you start finding that Maureen plucks money for each one to justify or to fill this position. Mm-hmm. So those are the big changes in the budget itself. I will go through the kind of capital projects that we currently have in the queue. Some of them are going to be brief, like Anger, because we've already kind of presented that, but I will let folks know today, about 5 hours ago, we processed our final bill, which will allow us to submit for a final closeout through MSBA, and then ultimately come back and turn back money. I think we're still in line to turn back approximately $1.2 million on that project. So overall, things are going great. We have one outstanding item as far as kind of punch list that we're working on over there. It's a sliding glass partition in the main office. We approved the fix to that last week.
So that money gets turned back to the people?
Correct.
So
debt exclusion.
The debt
exclusion. Correct. Yep. That's dangerous. There's not a lot more to say about that. I think everything's going great over there.
Can I ask you just out of curiosity, was there anything value engineered out that now that you have this money left?
No. And value engineering is, it's funny you mention that. So the thing with MSBA is every time you submit a progress set of plans, as soon as you submit that, if you make any changes that reduce the cost, it's automatically considered value engineering. The problem with that I have is that there are a lot of things that get put into a set of plans at different iterations that are not in response to any requests from the city or MPS. It's just things that a landscape architect or the design architect likes. So when we find something that MPS doesn't want and quite frankly, we don't think we can afford, and we remove it, they call it value engineering, but it's something that we never asked for. I don't consider that true value engineering in my mind. So the answer is no, not on Anger. In fact, none of our projects have we removed anything that NTS or myself wanted. There are plenty of lessons learned on all of our projects. You know, there are things that when I go through Anger, Anger's a beautiful building. There's a lot of you know, lovely attributes there. But there are certainly areas that I would have simplified, and we have simplified both in service and in Cabot, that, you know, basically you get the same level of building, you get the same durability, you actually get a better energy performing building for less money. So, you know, Anger, for example, if folks are watching through, you'll see above the main office, there's the clear story and kind of curved office. The architect really didn't think that they would cost an awful lot of money and felt like it would help transfer natural light. In reality, when you actually build it in the field, you look at it and it doesn't really buy you anything. It's not a tremendous amount of money, but when you start adding up all those little things, it can generate savings, which is why we address those in Jervis and at Cabot.
So you're saying that as part of the MSBA process, everything before there's something additional put in there, it doesn't go through us? You mean a landscape architect can just add something? It doesn't have to go through the city?
Well, it doesn't go through the city council. Oh no, certainly it goes through me. But as soon as it's in the plan, if you remove it, and the plan is, so when I get a project,
an add-on, I'm talking about. You gave an example.
Yeah. So for instance, architect when the landscape engineer is in his or her office and they're, you know, stamping trees and plantings all over the place on a site, the first time I know about that is when I get a progress set of plans. As soon as you get those plans, as soon as they're memorialized on paper, that's now something you submit to the MSBA, whether I want to remove something or not. A prime example, everybody knows how tight a site Cabot is. The last set of plans that I just looked at had 71 trees on the site. There's not enough room for 71 trees. It looks great on paper, and it probably would look great when they're little saplings, but when they are fully mature, they had trees that, you know, we just didn't think would survive. A lot of trees that were right up against the building, which is not good for a number of different reasons. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't want trees on our site. There's a lot of trees where it made a lot of sense. And it helps break up the mass and softens up those the hardscape. So that's just one example.
Right. So you first say, let me see the plan before we officially... Because that sounds like someone else is in charge of what's being put up.
Well, every architect and engineer has a vision. We don't necessarily always have to agree with that vision.
Right. And we're the customer, aren't we?
We are.
Well, that's why we have the design review committee.
So does somebody see it before...
Does
the design review committee see it before it automatically is submitted to the MSBA?
Well, it's not that it's automatically submitted. Once they hit... So we can't... We're not at their office while they're designing, and we can't... Whether it's a DRC or my staff, we can't see it until they print it. As soon as it's printed, it is now in MSBA's eyes, that's your progress set, and that's what needs to be submitted.
Shouldn't we be seeing it before it gets printed? Or after submitted?
No,
number of decisions that get made every day and every week and every design project, and you only see it at certain intervals, and we only see it at fewer intervals. And so, you know, I don't think we should get exercised about.
Yeah. Okay. It just sounds like we don't have control.
Well, it's not getting exercised. We want our professionals, our subs, to give us what they think is the best possible design, and sometimes, I think what Josh is saying is that can be a little bit over the top, and those are the things that sometimes get value engineered out. And as you point out, a big part of that process is design review. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's a good thing that we have, and of course staff. But you don't want to limit people. and keep them in just a little box. You want them to think out of the box a little bit and give you ideas.
Yeah, I do.
Right. You
sit on the final
stage. We do.
We do.
We do. We do.
So whatever happened with the 21-3 that they had put on the final, did they figure out another thing to go to? I'm assuming that the 21-3 was because of the trees that were coming down.
No. In fact, on the Cabot School project,
I'm sorry, I think it's the nervous.
We have to replant. Yeah. I think we already paid into the tree bank by now. So on Cabot, this is they're all additions. They're not additions because of subtraction. Okay. So, and I'll get a little further into that when I talk about integrated design, which will cause some people to gloss over, but I will do my best to simplify. That's easier for Zervis. The project is going great. We're ahead of schedule and under budget. We are on track to get our certificate of occupancy in June. We will then move kids from Cabot back into Zervis over the summer and kids from Cabot into Carr at the same time. So overall, I think it's been a very good process. We've worked with the direct abutters quite frequently. There's really been very, very few complaints on the project. What you'll see is, unlike at Anger where we had to do a lot of weekend work, there's not nearly as much because we are in a better place when it comes to the project schedule. The other nice thing is that if we do any weekend work, at this point we're almost all inside. We're going to start landscaping soon, but we have plenty of time to address that. We've applied all of the lessons learned from the Anger School project to Zervis, and that's not just in design but also in construction. Knowing things that are delayed, like on Anger, if folks remember, metal panels, the outside of the building took quite a while to get done. So one of the things that we did was we had W.T. Rich actually fly out to the place that manufactures the coil stock that ultimately makes the panels to make sure that what we're being told is actually what's occurring as far as the delivery schedule so that we don't get behind. Ultimately, we pulled it off on Anger, but that was right down to the wire. I'd be much more comfortable to come in ahead of schedule on Zervis and all of our projects, for that matter.
Josh, once the building is done and the cleaners have left, how long does it take to get all those desks and chairs and everything in, computers in?
So the move itself takes days. It's not that long. The technology can take a little bit longer because it's not as simple as just bringing it in. There's a lot of programming that goes on and fine-tuning and tweaking. That overall process for everything is probably a month to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. With the amount that we're taking in as far as furniture and technology, there's inevitably you're going to have stuff that has scratches or dents or things, and you have to do returns. But big picture, that's what we're looking at. That's the Cabot School, we're at 60% construction documents. We are right now working to release our early site package, which would include the demo of the newer addition, if you will, and the modulars. At the same time, we're coordinating this with the DPW culvert work that's going on this summer, because a portion of the culvert runs underneath a portion of the building that we're taking down. So we're coordinating both those efforts.
Am I correct? That culvert's the same one that then runs out to where the storage facility is going to be. Is that right?
It's Wanderburg Culvert. Yeah. It goes through the Cabot Park. I'm not sure.
Right, and then it goes over to where the storage facility is. Yeah, there was work being done there. Is there any need to coordinate? I mean, they're pretty far apart, but is there any need to coordinate any of that?
I don't think so, but I'll check with Ted Yerdy to see.
Because I know that we spent, when we did the storage facility on land use, we spent a fair amount of time talking about culvert issues.
Actually, it was the sewer.
Was it the sewer?
Yeah, because it's culvert, right, the Wanderburg culvert runs along one side of the site,
right,
and then dips down underneath the mass pipe.
Right.
But it's the sewer that got moved for the sake of the building.
The developer said they would enhance the culvert.
But there was some work going to be done on the culvert.
The developer was going to do that.
Something was, you know what, Josh, I don't want to belabor it, and it's very far apart, I mean, physically, but probably worthwhile just to double check if there's not something that needs to be coordinated.
Sure.
Can I ask you about Cabot? You said the project will be finished and the students will be finished in October. But, I mean, the project may be finished in October, but surely the students will be in September, right?
Have it?
It says in here that it's for October. Assuming that means that the total thing for the project or something.
It was very close, but I don't know. Maybe it was in the outcome. Cabot School project. Cabot School project. I got them to be students within October 2019. Yeah, so if you look at the result, it's the target fall. Yeah, so they'd be moving in September, where I can complete the previous April. So the actual project completion will be April, but the project completion and kids get in will be the fall.
Okay, so they'll be there at the beginning of the
year.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, have it, we're in the home stretch. As far as the design itself, we're going through with design review. And our design team, we just finalized 60% construction documents. The next phase would be the final set of construction documents. That we would then put out bid for our total GMP. There really has been no significant changes to what was presented previously to the City Council. As I mentioned earlier, we continue to refine and make tweaks of the design just to make sure that it's exactly what we want. Going through things like security systems and making sure that everything, a lot of NEC, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, lighting, a lot of the technical stuff, making sure that as the design evolves, that nothing has deviated from the original program, so that we're ultimately ensuring the school program is being met. Continuing to meet with NCF staff from the top down to make sure that what we, you know, what we have for kind of final plans is what they've envisioned. So that's a big picture on Cabot. The other thing that we're working on right now is. Cabot's going to be a tough project in that, unlike Anger and Zervis, we had DC-33 major road right next to it. Cabot Street, Cabot Street bridges, Parkview, it's a dense neighborhood. They're small streets. So what we're going to be doing in the next month is we're going to be putting together a flyer to get out to the residents ahead of time so that they know what the impact will be to kind of day-to-day traffic and pedestrian issues over there. So, you know, for instance, we're going to be shutting down Parkview. That's going to have an impact. Specifically, we need to work with the folks on Norwood and so that they know how they can come and go during the day. But furthermore, we're going to have to make sure that we have some pretty good message boards up ahead of time so that folks know where they can and can't drive. Bridges, for example, we're going to have to shut the street down at certain periods of time for our utilities work. So we're going to have to work very closely with the abutters there as well. So that's the other thing that you folks are probably, especially Ward 2, will start to hear. Once we send that out, I would imagine people will have questions.
Have we taken over the Potter house yet?
We have not, but I got great news the other day. Kathy Potter, we spoke to her, and she bought a house in Newton. Yeah, she couldn't find what she wanted in Newton, but she's happy. And okay. She said her family is very happy with the decision. So, and we reached out to her because we wanted to give her a heads up ahead of time that we need to get on there for the culvert work.
Okay. And are you going to need to use any of the Cabot Park area at all for staging or anything else?
Yes. There's the area of the park where the softball field is that is ultimately going to be play space that's going to be part of our property in the end. Anyways, it's our property, but it will be shared use. But it all needs to be tore up anyways. So some of that area is going to be used for staging, specifically soils. One of the challenges that we face on tight sites is that if you don't have an area for lay down clean, reusable soil, you actually have to pay people to go dispose of the soil, and then they then turn around and sell that soil back to you. I hate paying for dirt. I hate it. So if I can find a way to store it on site, I'm going to.
So have you talked to the Little Leagues yet and the other users of the park? Because, I mean, Little League, for example, could be affected. A lot of people park there now when they go to a game.
So, for the portion that we're going to be using, it was a stipulation that I said right from the get-go, knowing that the Little League field is very heavily used, that we not impact their field of play at all. So we will not be impacting it, their outfield. And in fact, on that edge, what I just came from a meeting last week, I specified that I want at least a 10-foot fence that runs along that side, because if there are any any future MLB stars, I want to make sure that none of the home runs are going on to the construction site, because I don't want a chance that kids are trying to hop a fence.
And what about the cars that park for games? You're going to deal with that as well?
So part of our mailing is going to be kind of a parking plan during the project, and then what the parking will be afterwards.
I think you get the mailing though, it's going to be your immediate neighbors. I would suggest going to the league itself.
Oh, we certainly are. Okay. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because
we got to reach out not only to the Little League, but also, they don't use a lot, but there's the softball field that's going to be impacted. Bobby Roots has got a plan. I've worked with Tom Cagle on that. But you're right, definitely for the Little League. We need to make sure they're included.
Okay, thanks.
Scott, you suggest a separate web page on the city site for Cabot. About the density. You know, you're talking about the impact and the density and what's going to go on and daily, weekly, monthly. It might be good to have a separate page that people can, you know, up to,
yep.
People can go to, so they know what's going on.
Yeah, no, that's we have that already. So what we've developed for this will be populated as part of the responsibilities of our owner, project manager, but it's also something that we take responsibility and ownership of as well. So we make sure that gets up there. So that's Cabot, the Fire Station 3 headquarters project. We are ahead of schedule on that project as well. I can't officially commit to it, but we are definitely going to have the firemen in there in June, but we originally thought fire headquarters might be October. It looks like it could be September, which is good news for a couple reasons. Obviously, the chief would love to get in there as soon as possible. It's also hurricane season, so there's a chance for inclement weather, so the EOC being live would be good. And furthermore, the shorter the duration, the less general conditions there are. And general conditions on a project of that size can run $100,000 to $120,000 a month. So, coming in a month early is...
Where are you in cost for that?
We are...
You can't say you're on budget.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't. We are seven figures under right now. I'm not going to get the exact number because I have a contractor that theoretically could listen to this.
Seven figures under the final approved budget.
Exactly. Yep. But I got to keep my cards in my desk. I don't want the contractor finding out how much money we have.
Okay, press that from here. We're tracking under budget, but who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and I got to say, Commodore Builders has been great. RCM on that project. They have been very transparent, very good. I mean, I've been very impressed with them. And the fire department has been great. They've been working with us every day. It's a tremendous amount of work. I will say this, I had no idea the amount of work it was going to take for that EOC, for the backup dispatch, the tower, the emergency communications equipment. The coordination of that is huge. Alex Chattis, new hire for new fire.
Great find.
Because, yeah. I mean, honestly, there are only a few people in the state that have the knowledge. I mean, he knows way more than the consultants that we've brought on. And that's not a knock on a consultant. He just really knows his stuff. Like, for instance, we had to submit for the tower for the FCC, to the FCC for that license. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is going to take 6 months, a year to get through the Fed. No, Alex, he bird-dogged that, and I think we had it back in 2 weeks. To get anything through the Fed in 2 weeks, I think is miraculous.
Can I just say, I asked for a tour of the fire station not too long ago, and if you haven't been over there, and if Josh is willing, it's really exciting. In fact, all your construction sites are very well managed. They're clean and orderly, and you get to have the sense that you're safe when you're in the building. And when you're talking about the emergency operations center, I was there when they were building. So they showed me how they were building a floor, like a big plenum in the floor. The wires were just hanging. The wires are every, it's just an amazing amount of stuff. It gave me a headache to look at it. You know, think about our wireless subcommittee, the amount of material that has to be laced through that floor in order to feed the communication center is unbelievable.
And at the same time, doing that all while keeping the existing emergency communications equipment active and protected in that building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a Herculean effort. It is, that would be well beyond my area of expertise. So, again, I can't thank you to fire enough. It's been a lot of work for everybody involved to get that thing on. So, and we're close, very close to wrapping that up. So, Aquinas real quick. I think most everybody knows that we submitted for the feasibility. Hopefully we will hear some good news next winter on that, so that we can get started on feasibility for that project. Fire headquarters will be moving out of the convent, as I mentioned, this fall, and then that portion of the building will essentially be mothballed. And when I say that, I just mean heat and water shut off to try to control utility costs over there.
If we don't get the money for Aquinas from the state, what is the plan?
I would have to defer to our CFO on that one. I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
So will the preschool be able to stay there and keep running while the rest of the team?
So, again, that would be part of the feasibility study. If you're asking my personal opinion, I don't think so. I think the preschool program, as folks know, it's a lot of very little kids, but there's also a high amount of special needs children there. It would be very challenging to do an occupied demo renovation addition with a vulnerable population in that building. Mm-hmm. But that's part of feasibility. And
do you know where they'll go yet?
No. That would also be part of the feasibility study. And I also, I don't want to speak for MPS and the school committee, because they need to weigh in on that.
So, Josh, you've had a number of conversations over the last couple months via email, with a lot of the abutters constantly asking about what's going on the site. And I know that some of it's not in your control because it's through the school committee, but there's a growing frustration in the neighborhood about the lack of a site plan. And I just think that it might be helpful. I'm not saying you'd answer it right now, but it really came to light with the whole bus issue.
Yeah.
But as you know, folks have been inquiring about everything that's going on at the site. We put the playground in behind the building, and they weren't aware we were going to do that. And then we've been doing plow storage down there, and front end loaders, and the big belly exchange, and there's going to be off the street, and the fire is going to be moving out, and the fencing has been ripped up due to the winter season. There's no understanding of actually what we're doing on the site, and a lot of the abutters are coming to the councilors, and we're like, we don't really know.
Yeah.
I just think we should try to find a way that even at a minimum. Folks have been asking us, these things snowballing. Well, where is the gymnasium going to go when you do that? I don't have that answer. No, I don't think anybody has that answer yet. But is there a way to kind of even just generally put out what we're doing with the site? I also believe that this body passed the last budget, a resolution talking about, recreation areas in terms of that site and the Lincoln Elliott site that needs help. We're going to be talking about swing space now, how that's all going to work, and there's no real site plan. So if you want to say to me, we just thought of that stage yet, that's fine. I think the three of us from the ward are having some difficulty relaying information back, and you've been a part of some of those. You've been very helpful, but I'm just trying to see of what your sense might be on getting something just generally to let folks know what's going on.
So the challenge is, this is another MSDA challenge. So let's say that we adopted an item for a nominal amount of money to come in and just do a conceptual site plan. MSDA they won't accept that. You have to start over. Some folks will tell you that MSDA doesn't look kindly on that because you're basically saying you can afford to spend money twice on the same thing. So that's the real challenge. As far as answering other questions, like the front end loaders, I call Bob Rubis, and he, I don't know if you noticed, but three of the four are gone. The contractors. Yeah, I know about, yeah. And, yeah, they were multiplying. I'm not sure what was going on. And then the fence that got torched, I went over there the other day myself and pulled one of the poles out. There's no concrete. They're literally just hand pick that. So Bob wanted to get through the marathon, and then he said he'll have his crew go out there and get that all cleaned up. I confirmed with MPS, there's really no need at this point for that fence to be replaced. It's so far from the pool itself that it's not really a safety issue. And it's not like it secures the site. You know, we can walk into the site right now anyway. So I don't really have a great answer as far as, you know, there's
yeah, I'm not part of the spot either.
No, I know.
You've just been part of some of the correspondences so that folks know that that's what some of the folks in the neighborhood were talking about. It kind of shed a little more light during the whole bus issue, but if we could just kind of keep that in mind as we go forward, I think, you know, they're starting to organize, around communication with regard to that site. So maybe if we can just stay in touch and that would be great.
One of the things that I would offer up, I'm afraid to kind of put anything on paper because of the MSBA issue, but I'd be happy to meet over there like we did for the open house and just tell them some of the concepts that people are thinking about.
Okay.
That might appease folks as far as, you know, feeling like not only are they part of the process, but they know what, you know, the thoughts are being thrown around.
Okay, great. Happy to
be
there. Thank you.
Okay, so that's the big, the kind of five big projects in the queue right now. The CIT, there's a couple small, well, I would say smaller ones. New South High School, I want to just point this out, the number is wrong in there. It says $17,500. That obviously is not a CIT item. I mentioned it to the CFO. I saw that earlier today. In the CIT, it's listed as $505,000, I believe. So I don't have an answer for you as far as, you know, what the typo was there, but we will get that corrected. It's not going to be $500,000. We have a budgetary item, a budgetary quote right now for about $260,000.
That's
an indoor supplement? The supplemental has it, yeah.
I want to hear by asset category,
buildings,
school,
south
indoor, Mondo Fest.
It's priority number 42.
It's here at $517,500
in the asset category.
So I'm looking at the asset
category
for them,
one
building.
Yeah, that is weird. The one that I have electronically,
mm-hmm.
You're right, the one I have here is $517,500.
Okay.
All right, never mind. I guess it looks good then. The one that I had electronically, the five dropped, so all I had was a 17.5. I couldn't figure out why. All right, so good news. It's not going to be $517,000. I believe it's going to be closer to $300,000, maybe a little less than that $1,000.
And this is to replace the indoor track material?
Yeah, so the indoor track material is breaking up pretty good. It, you know, in talking with MTS and the AD, they feel like we can probably get another year with holding meets there, but beyond that, whatever the governing body of the, you know, the track folks are, will start to say that it no longer is good for me.
Have there been injuries?
Not that I'm aware of. We asked that question. They said that's not the issue. It's just, it continues to break down. The other thing is that apparently they use cleats. They're soft cleats, but it does a number on that track. The new track that we're specifying and working with Mondo is designed for cleats. So it should hold up. I believe they said the life expectancy of that system is 15 years.
So are you then figuring in, as you look forward, that in 15 years from now you're going to have to replace that again? I mean, are we doing some kind of calculation there in our projections?
So it is. It's wrapped up in the 20-year CIT, which has very large numbers. It doesn't break it down to that level. But every single system, whether it's a floor finish, a rooftop unit, a boiler, a window, has a life expectancy. So when we project out long-term, large-scale, we do apply that.
That's part of your long-term 15 years, and now you're going to have to put the money in again.
Yeah.
Okay. How long is this for?
15 years.
Yeah. I think we did the south work in
2002.
Yeah.
I believe. Time flies. All right, the next one is DPW Wash Day. This is the building itself is located at Craft Street. This project is essentially, the building shell is great. It's in remarkable condition, actually. But the entire internal system, the hot water system, the undercarriage spray system, ventilation system, the electrical system, basically everything is in rough shape over there. A lot of it is just, it's rusted out from the salt.
That one.
That is number
You all can stay on that page, but if you go to the asset category for buildings, they're all in a row.
Oh, thank you.
Where is that?
You go to asset category.
You were looking on the supplemental.
Oh, you're looking on the supplemental?
What number is this?
This is the regular, but I'm saying this, they only did...
They added the one or two things, I think three things that Josh was talking about, but they just ran this by priority. That's why he's rattling off priority numbers. That's what I was looking at.
Right.
It's still the, you're right, it's the full number.
But if you do go by asset category, you can just go over to 2018 and everything's in a row.
So number 40, I don't have many of these, to be honest with you. I have three more, so I will just find them before I speak to it. So for the wash day, it's item number, I'm just looking at it.
Did you say 46?
Yes, number 46.
All right.
That's $500,000?
Yes. $517,500. And that's because there's an automatic escalator that's built in.
Oh.
So it's a percentage.
$17,500.
Yeah.
Did the wash day really cost that much?
We just 2 weeks ago had a company come out and take a look. I think it's going to be less than that, and we will revise that down when we get the budgetary quote from that company.
Is the wash bay within the South Street facility itself, or is it separate?
It's
I was inquiring of the commission.
it's within the site. It's not within any. It's not attached to any building.
And
it's a freestanding facility in front of the garage. Basically a small brick box, if you will.
Put the vehicles in, wash them out.
Yeah, you wash them one at a time.
It's like a scrub it up, right?
Yeah, basically, yep. Just a little bigger and a little more industrial, because you put bigger vehicles in there. But DEC does not allow you to wash outside because of grease and oil and all that. So, you know, part of this is we need to do this to extend the life of our equipment, which it certainly will. The other part of this is that there are regulations that they're starting to clamp down on that we need to make sure that we have adequate facilities to wash these pieces of equipment. So the good news is Jim McGonigal coming from Boston and his experience with fleet there has actually done wash days. So he had not only good contact with the engineers to do these types of projects, but he knows what it should cost too.
Okay. Do we do all city vehicles there or just DPW vehicles?
All vehicles. Okay. All vehicles. Now, I can't guarantee that there's a police officer that doesn't wash his own vehicle. I would hazard a guess. There probably are some that do that, but, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, the library. This is the one item that was added, and it's on the narrative at the front of the supplemental CIP. And the item number is 54, priority number 54. So this is called the Children's Area Upgrade. So this number is $517,500 again.
Where's that number?
Boy, it's
everywhere.
So this project, so as many folks know, the library and the trustees, we're working on a larger addition renovation for the main library. That table. But in working with Phil and the trustees, we said, well, let's sit down and figure out what are the kind of top three priorities, if you will. And we sat down with Maureen and she said, why don't we try to knock off $500,000 a year for the next 3 years to try to address the major issues that you're struggling with over there. Their number one item was the nature space. They have a grant for that, so they're doing that one on their own. The next biggest issue was the children's area. It's too small, and the bathrooms are super tiny. Super, super tiny. I don't even know how I get built. This phase is going to be expanding the children's area. We looked at some of the adjacent reference area, and Phil has been working independent of this to reduce the amount of books in the library. There's a lot of books that just aren't used. I know not many people crack open encyclopedias anymore, though.
We'll have a separate discussion.
But at the same time, the children's area has never been used more. So as much as it pains folks to give away the Britannica, It does mean that they were going to have more space for an area of the library that's utilized a lot. So this is going to be an expansion and essentially finishes in the children's area. We will expand the bathroom to make it appropriate, not only handicap accessible, but really focused on mother or father with children and carriages, and as a father of twins, it's very difficult to get a double stroller in almost any bathroom. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I wouldn't have a shot at those. So that's the big picture there. When you see the item come before you, it's going to be a little more broad, simply because I think we can achieve that within that number, and there's a couple other, what I would consider smaller things, but important things that I think we can address over there. As folks may know, the main staircase, the carpet on it is pretty tired. I'd really like to get that done with something that's a little more durable. It probably won't be carpet. It will probably be a Pirelli rubber system that's acoustically desirable, but also much, much more durable. So, and then the next phase, which it's not in here, but I'll briefly go through the next two phases. The next phase would be really focused on the circulation desk and making that ADA compliant, but also much more functional. It's kind of weird in how it's designed. It's also weird that when you come in the front door, it's to the right, you're not looking at it. So we got to work with that kind of area to make that a little more user-friendly. At the same time, Phil is going to be looking at kind of the back of house space. We've got a large amount of square footage on the first floor prime real estate that is circulation and, you know, just people working, and for a variety of reasons, he would like to see that space get repurposed for more library program functions and get those folks potentially up to the third floor, because a lot of them are just 9-to-5ers that come in and they work at the same desk all day long. So that's kind of phase two. And then phase three, the next biggest priority for them was the Drucker Auditorium is too small. It's programmed out like you wouldn't believe. They constantly have capacity issues where they have to either turn people away or they're standing in the halls. So, you know, as Phil continues to work with the trustees and his staff to reduce their book count, it's going to open up square footage in the library, which will allow us to potentially create some more small conference rooms that are also in high demand, which would then free up the small conference rooms adjacent to the existing Drucker Auditorium, which would then potentially allow us to expand the footprint of the Drucker. That's the last
question. So, I think this is great. I mean, I'm a huge fan of libraries, but you're now spending an extra $500,000. Where's it coming from?
Part of our bonding and borrowing. I'm not sure the exact location.
Well, but, we can't just,
that's a moving question.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd like you to go, if you could find out the answer from the CFO. It's great that we're doing this, but where is it coming from?
It should say it on the list. It's bonding.
I know it's bonding, but it means are we increasing our bonding capacity? Are we not doing something else? Are we just deciding to bond more, and now we're going to have more debt service? I mean, there's got to be some effect on it. Well, I just want to know what's being bumped. That's all.
I don't think you're adding $500,000
as a priority. Well, if you're adding $500,000 as a priority, it means you have debt service in a certain amount, additional amount this next year that you have to meet. Where's that coming from? How are we paying for it?
There's a reason to go up with the amount.
Yeah. So that's for $40,000 in debt service, according to Maureen. She says it's about $80,000 a million. Right? So that's not a huge amount of money. But I get
your stuff. I'm all in favor of this, okay? But whenever I see something that says, well, it's like we found the money to do this, where is that $40,000 coming from? Are we not filling a position? Are we not doing another project? I mean, did we find $40,000 somewhere that we didn't know about? I mean, there must be some answer to it.
Okay.
That's all. It's not meant as a
criticism.
It's
not
meant
as
a criticism. No, there's always
feedback
issues.
So
I think
that's
a good day off.
That's fine.
So, I know that there was a grand scheme, a grand plan, and the DRC was involved with that. So as you do the little pieces, will you still have the DRC involved?
Yes. Yeah, and as I was mentioning to Councilor Albright earlier, I don't, maybe even for the children, we'll find out, but for some of this, what I may suggest, even though it's not required by, you know, because this isn't 558, I might come in and just request the design funds so that I can come back with some concepts. Specifically for the piece about Drucker, especially, because that's going to really change the feel of the library when you enter it, and I want to make sure that there are no surprises. I don't want to fully design and did something and then have folks not like the finished product.
Yeah, yeah. So. On the library, though, do you have a few words to say about how they're approaching their master plan? You just looked at a number of projects in order of priority.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought they were doing is that they were going to go back to the drawing boards and look at what they ultimately want to achieve and then come back to us and talk about how to prioritize that work or how we might do it. I mean, they've gone from thinking they had a $35 million project to having a $70-something million project and we all gasped and they went away. But there's still work that needs to be done and they still have a long-term vision. So. Are you involved in discussions about this?
Yes. So their prioritization, their priority list, was generated from all of the design work that they did to date on that project. My recommendation would be that at some point, I think it's inevitable, at some point there will be a library project. I don't know what that is or how big it is, but that in mind, what I'm going to suggest for these phases is that we continue to use the same architect that's been involved since day one, so that whatever we're doing, we're not throwing good money, after bad, and that whatever we do will work with the long-term vision, not only of the library and the trustees, but also with the architect, because the architect we selected for this project does a lot of library work. So.
But that architect also needed some guidance, because clearly that architect was not hemmed in by scope of work. I mean, it just got bigger and bigger. So is there a process, too, that we're talking about?
I'm not sure that was the architect as much as it was the director.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying that, there needs to be, that's why there needs to be these discussions and some kind of, some way to limit the scope within reason.
Yes.
Lenny?
Well, this gone from asking for $70 million to $517,000, so they're on the right track in my mind.
I agree.
Nadia, before I forget, if you could make a note that, and we've done this the last couple of years, that from the administration, we need a very clear document. The public hearing on the capital improvement plan, including any supplemental, and there's only two items, is on May the 1st, and we need to have a very clear document that says the FY18 capital improvement projects are, and then they'll be listed so that people aren't, flipping around in this thing trying to find different projects. Maureen will know what I'm asking for, and I'll try to remember to ask her, but we need to do that. That way, with this project, for instance, in the note, it says it's been added, so nothing's been cut, so we at least know that. But then you, on that evening, can say, where did we get the extra money?
Okay.
But what I'm going to be stressing, as I always do, is let's focus on what's planned for the next year. Let's not worry about item number 112 that's supposed to be done in FY 2022. I don't know if that helps us an awful lot. We really want to focus on FY18 projects and get in answers to questions like Mark had.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you
done?
Sorry,
can I ask a question back on the budget?
I'm not done with the CIP.
Oh,
CIP.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm close. All right, so the last FY18 CIP project is a car school air conditioning, priority number 55.
That's an 019, my friend.
Yeah. That it is.
Yeah. Right. And I'm glad it is, because I really don't want to get into that tonight.
All right.
What?
You are correct.
Car school air conditioning.
Write that one
off. FY19.
Talk to you next year.
Okay.
All right.
Are you still?
I have two more, just quick updates.
Go ahead.
The Crescent Street project.
Yeah.
So, just real quick on that one, we have an OPM and a designer on board for that project. Mm-hmm. We have a community meeting coming up very shortly. We are having staff meetings to kind of figure out what we're going to be presenting, but ultimately we have no assumptions made other than what's in the board order. We kind of really, the first meeting with the community is to hear what they want, what they don't want, kind of from a high level point of view, and then ultimately bring that back to the working group, which has a number of counselors, including some that are at the table, so that we can start to give our design team and our owner project manager some direction on what we're trying to achieve over there. And when I say what we're trying to achieve, ultimately we know it's a minimum of 4 affordable units, 8 total units, but, where's the housing going to be sited on the site? What is the open space going to look like? What kind of park amenities, if you will it have? What does the pedestrian access look like? What does parking look like? Really kind of what elements do we want and what elements do we not want on that site? Because at this point, it's a little amorphous for design.
Question on that?
Sure.
So to facilitate that first community meeting, are you having a design team do concept alternates,
no.
The way we do for schools?
No.
We were very concerned that if we threw up concept alternates, that it really feels like we've already started design work. And I think there's a sensitivity to this project and to that neighborhood that we really want to make sure that the very first meeting is really Q&A and just kind of feeling people out. That ultimately can then lead into coming back with concept. We will provide boards that just show the site and what exists there now and what will exist once we demolish the buildings, but that's kind of as far as we want to take it for that very first.
Well, we're going to take it one further step. First, we want to bring them up to date as to how we've gotten to this point. From, because as you know, at one point this was surplus and it was going out to bid. And so we want to bring people up to date. But in addition to doing what Josh just said, we did ask the architect to be prepared to show some projects that they have done in the past, so people have something to look at and say, we like that, we like this. And then one of the exciting things is that the landscape architect that is connected with Abacus, who was the successful design team. The company has a really good reputation for designing a park. Carol Stein from Recreation made the comment that they have tried to get this firm interested in several of our park projects in the past, and it's just never worked out. They've either been too busy or they've never bid. So when she saw that they were partnered it up, she was real excited, and that's probably, well, you weren't there that last day, but that's probably what put them over the top. There were 7 submittals, and 5 were shortlisted. 3 of them were sort of so-so, and there were 2 firms that were extremely close in the design selection committee's eyes. There were like 3 that liked one and 2 that liked the other, and I think just as in the spirit of cooperation, they decided to recommend the Abacus, and because they heard a lot of what people had to say about the park and the importance of the open space.
So what is
the
can't think of her name.
I can't.
I can get it to you,
okay. Okay. No, that's the
thing. Doing the playground.
Yeah. So we've asked that. There was a woman there that was seen to primarily represent the landscape design company, and we've asked her to show some work that she has done over the years with different parks, and there's a multitude of examples. So we're going to be showing that also for people to comment on.
Great.
And then lastly, I just wanted a quick update on the solar project. We've got solar is online at a number of different buildings, most of them being rooftops. We also have the solar online at the carport at New South High School, the carport at Elliott Street, CCW Yard. And we are in the works of getting solar ready to go on to the roof at Zervis. We're hoping to have that operational by this fall. Rumford Ave, we are on target to have that operational in 6 to 8 weeks. And we have another community meeting for Rumford Ave next week. Our architect has come up with, our Amoresco has come up with a number of different fence options and renderings that we intend on presenting to the community next week. So
if it's 6 to 8 weeks, then we're going to miss our May 8th deadline, and is that just going to, as I understand it, cost us money?
Right now we're on track to meet the May 8th deadline. I was thinking that's for 6 weeks. But, so right now we're on track. If there's any delays, then yes. Is it really?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh,
good
Lord.
All right, yeah, so we're not much closer than I thought.
But we're still on track.
We are still on track. The big thing is, in order for it to be, we need to be mechanically complete. In order for it to be mechanically complete, a fence has to be up so the area is secure. Part of the fence going up is we need to meet with the community next week to decide on the actual type of fence so that they can procure it and install it.
So we're not going to get that done in time. Let's be realistic. Because not only do we have to figure out the fence, but it has to be approved by DEP, right?
So they've already started the process with DEP. They don't really care what type of fence, as far as, you know, the material that you use. You need to submit the ballasting and kind of the weight load. That is independent. So Amoresco still thinks that they're going to make it. We'll see.
But there's a fair amount of money at risk if we're not ready by the 8th. And I've been thinking long and hard on this, and it's been keeping me up at night. With you know everything else, I haven't thought to call you on it. I almost wonder if it makes sense for us to just throw up the most inexpensive chain link fence around the site, and then you know continue with our plans and put another fence inside it. That's never a bad idea in terms of safety.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering how much you know if how much that chain link might cost to satisfy you know that May 8th deadline.
Then how much money might be at risk?
We've heard some. You know,
it's a lot.
Huh?
It was a big number.
No, I don't think we've been given a number, but it's definitely. I don't know, 20%, maybe 20%.
Because we get less of a reimbursement after May
8th.
Because that's forever.
Yeah. We could do something like that. You know, the flip side is, look, the bottom line is we're going to submit, there's basically three different types of fence options. It's a wood cedar fence. I think it's much nicer than the one that was put in at Weston, but there is...
Yeah, the Weston fence.
Yeah. There's an agricultural fence, but I think it looks the best, but you can see through portions of it. So then you would be looking at the solar panels. And then there's a chain link fence with slats that I think is not as desirable. So I think folks are going to want the cedar fence.
No, I know that, but you're talking about building it on the slope, right? Mm-hmm. And getting much more higher on the slope. And I was just thinking, if we just stuck it to the, you know, along the flat area, and like in back of the apartment buildings and so forth, and just ran that to be compliant, we ought to just look into it. And then we would keep it.
Yeah.
And then you'd have, so that would, from a functional standpoint, that would help to keep people out. And then you'd have a second fence, which from a aesthetic point of view, is going to make everybody happy. I mean, I would not have originally designed it that way, but I'm just wondering if we can get a fence up.
And then after we
cost us less,
but no, I keep it.
And you're going to have a space between a chain link fence and a wood fence that nobody can get to, and it's just going to grow weeds.
No, you could have an opening in the.
Is that a long distance? It's not.
You could have an opening in the chain link. If you're talking about getting in there to maintain it, you just have you'd have an opening in the chain link to be able to get access.
It's a non-issue because it's a ballasted system, regardless of the fence you put down. So ballasted meaning it doesn't penetrate the ground at all. Yeah. So if we did that, you would just pull up a section and you'd put a new section in. It doesn't matter if it's a wood fence or a chain link fence.
Yeah, but you're talking more about day-to-day maintenance of cutting and stuff,
or? Hopefully there won't be day-to-day, but yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could provide access.
You're saying that this fence is going to be like the panels themselves, you're going to have concrete feet on it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it
looks
pretty easy to pop out.
Can I just get some clarification here? So, by May 8th, the reason we'd want to put in a fence is because they need to be operational and we need a fence to be operational?
Yes. In order to be operational, they also have to have the site being secure. And
that needs a fence.
That needs a fence.
So, and if we don't get the front fence in by May 8th, we lose how much money a year?
Don't quote me, but I think it's about 20% of $380,000-ish.
So we lose like 60 grand a year?
It could be. We have to double check.
Yeah.
It's not insignificant.
Maybe it's 30 grand a year in perpetuity?
Yeah.
So we need to do this.
Yeah.
So how hard is it to put the fence in?
It's not hard, but the other thing I was going to say is that 3/4 of the perimeter, we already know it's going to be our payment fence. So when we met out there yesterday, Ferguson and the contractor and I told him there's absolutely no reason on the Charles River side to get started with the payment fence up there. Are no residents back there.
So how long does it take to put that fence in?
They tell us the fence goes in a week. Again, where it's fallacy, it just shows up and you drop
it. It's now April 19th. Okay, we have to have a fence in by May 8th. That is 19 days.
Counting weekends?
Is it day when you balance it?
Yeah.
So, can we get that started? I'm being very serious. Can you start it tomorrow morning?
I think
Steel Coat's closed right now, but
and I wasn't aware of this at all, okay? But if there's that kind of money at risk, why would we put ourselves in a position where we could be, there's a delay, there's a problem.
Mm.
We missed it by 2 days. They're not going to, if I'm them, I say, you're tough luck.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
I hear you.
But you're waiting for the community, which probably could have happened.
Nobody just said 3/4 of them can be chain link.
I wouldn't wait for anything right now. Put whatever you need to put in now, and the worst is you take it out.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I'm sure you have to understand the cost of the extra fencing, but.
It's not going to be 30 grand a year.
Probably need that somewhere else. I'm sure you need it.
Again, especially with balances, concrete attached.
I know you're here.
I agree.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you,
Michael.
There's a couple other things you didn't mention that actually just like an update on some of what may already be done. Some we know are not done. And taking a different path. For example, number 26, a metal building for 510 West. Number 22, the Bigelow School Mechanical.
Are you in the supplemental again?
I'm looking at the supplemental.
There's nothing in the supplemental. There's two items.
Items. These are items that have been before us this year that are not complete, or we haven't heard that they're complete, or we know they're taking a different path, but we might want to be updated on it. The Ed Center basement, for example, number 19. Well, I just wanted to list them. They say 2017 to be docketed. We have not approved money for the Ed Center basement. For the FAJ generator, I just don't remember it. Bigelow School mechanical upgrades. Elliott Street building, we have not approved that. That's awaiting a defense of the Elliott Yard. And I guess that's it. But those are a bunch of things that we haven't heard about.
All right, I'm clear those up very quickly. Number 19, the Ed Center basement renovation Central High. If you look at the school committee's most recent presentation on their budget for next year, they are funding the Ed Center basement themselves. So that's why you won't see that item brought to the city council.
Okay. Why are they taken off of here?
The school why is funding
themselves. Why are they funding it themselves when they cut some deal with the mayor to be able to do that?
they didn't cut a deal with the mayor, but they are getting extra money because of the health insurance holiday. And so they decided, and I don't necessarily agree with this unless it's scaled back, and they decided that they want to go with this project. When we meet, feel free to ask all the questions that you want on this. I personally didn't work on, and I didn't do anything special. I was just consulted on this health insurance holiday. I did it so they would get librarians back and other mm-hmm. staff. I didn't do it for them to build more conference rooms in the basement. Okay?
My understanding is they're not.
Well, that's what I want to know.
Doing this project for the 250, but I think we should get that controlled.
Yes.
I wanted to.
The ed center is in horrible shape, and the basement is in horrible shape down there. But money from a health holiday shouldn't just be going for structural improvement.
Well, it's one-time funds, so it actually isn't a bad idea. I mean, it's just in terms of one-time money, it does make sense in that respect. But again, we were hearing about librarians and other staff issues. So I'm sure this will get discussed. I'm hoping it will get discussed when the school committee comes in. Whatever it is.
Number 20, the FAA generator, that came in right around the limit of $75,000, and the school department ended up paying for that out of charter maintenance. So this one actually, when I was reviewing this earlier today, I need to confirm. I was under the impression that this was going to be an FY18 project. So I have a call into Maureen, just confirming whether or not it is or isn't. If it's not, then I would look to docket the item pretty quickly so that we can try to get as much work done over the summer as possible. If it isn't, then obviously we would wait. I don't want to do boilers in the winter.
Okay.
And then number 26, this is the Elliott Street building for Park and Rec.
Yeah,
so that one we held on. I think the plan as of right now is to sit down with Bob DeRubis, Jim McGonigal, myself, Lenny, and Deb to go through the brief commissioners. We're going to go through and kind of do our own kind of personnel and space utilization plan, using not only the existing facilities and how they're used, but equipment and storage and construction debris and basically everything operations at the yard, and so that we can come up with a good game plan. The difference right now is, as opposed to building a new facility for Parks and Rec, I think we're going to have a plan proposed where we put Parks and Rec in the first floor of the Elliott Street Stable Building, and then potentially build a vehicle storage. Because right now, that entire first floor is being used for vehicle storage. So you have a conditioned area that really it would be better used for Parks and Rec operations. And in talking with Commissioner McDonald, the equipment just needs to be covered storage. It doesn't need to be heated. So we could do a buffer building or something like that on the site that's not conditioned for less money, obviously, where we could store the equipment. Mm-hmm. So, but anyways, we're going to be working out all the details, and then we will sit down with you guys, and ultimately we'll come back to public facilities for that project.
So again, my understanding is this needs to happen because the rec department needs to move because we're starting to get, close on Crescent Street, and that stuff was supposed to move years ago, but it made sense to keep it where it was, but the neighbors have been good about it, so it's all been fine, but it needs to move. So this part of that site needs to happen sooner rather than later. So there isn't going to be some huge master plan ready for, you know, to figure out exactly what we're, well, not, I shouldn't say not to figure out what we're going to do, but when, there's not going to be a master plan ready before a decision needs to be made on this. So the plan is that we need public work and recreation to figure out what makes the most sense, and then to bring the plan is to have a site visit with you, me, anybody else that wants to be there, so they can say, listen, this is what we think that we should do right now in order to effectively move the customer up and let them make the case. So we've been waiting for them to get to that point to bring us out there, and so that they can say, listen, this is where we think we should move the operation. But I don't want you thinking that there's going to be this huge master plan ready to go. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, but what they're going to present is obviously got to make sense. And it's got to make sense with the future in mind, too. But we got to get this operation.
And shame on us for not doing this for much longer ago. However, you don't want to just plop a building on a site without thinking through what the needs are for each department in total. And, you know, it's time to get put those heads together, you and Jim and Bob. Like we do any other assessment, like here's what we need, here's our program, here are our programmatic needs.
So that's what they're planning on doing. Yep. And then I would hope that within, you know, a month's time, that we'll be ready to go out there. And it doesn't have to just be you, me, or anybody else from the committee, so we can see what they're recommending. And it may not be a new, it may not be another freestanding building. There's buildings up there.
It may not be a master plan, but at least it'll be a comprehensive, it'll come from, you know, all of the departments and all of what they need.
But it'll be thoughtful. So I think we were right to hold on a new pre-engineered building for the site. You know, there's a lot going on that site. Mm. And in fact, Jim has taken steps to reorganize the site already.
Yes.
You know, one big thing was getting rid of all that enormous piles of excavate and organizing some of the materials they have on site. There's a lot to do.
Mm.
And I'm really glad we're taking this step.
So what was the original plan on the
The original plan was to go down the street with a new building? There was not an original plan. By reminding, we had a docket item before us a few weeks ago for $350,000 to locate a pre-engineered building at the Elliott Street Yard. We didn't know where. And for the mechanics there, that's being moved from Crescent Street, which I guess is the one piece of the one thing that needs to be set up so that they can move.
So there was no plan where they declared
it. No, I mean, other than it to say, you're right. The 3 or 4 years ago, when the building was declared surplus, when we asked, well, what's going to happen to the operation that's down there, it's going to go to Elliott Street. But beyond that, there was nothing about where we want this pre-engineered building or whatever. That was never explained to us. And so now it's time to move it, so it's like, okay, we're going to move it, but how are we going to house it?
Okay, thank you for that update. Susan, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, first I want to ask you about that leak that I discovered at Newton North in the auditorium. Did you ever have a chance to figure out what that was?
They said it took them a while, but they said it was actually coming from an air handling unit. Water was blowing, rain was blowing in sideways, chasing down, and then found its way in.
That's better than a lot of other things, isn't it?
Yeah, it could have been far worse.
But can I ask you a question on the budget?
Sure.
It went down, and I just was curious about them. There were two lines that went down. It was, this is going to be consultants and architectural services.
What page?
Page 3.
Sorry.
Are you okay? I guess those lines have been up and down, so...
They fluctuate a lot, and it can be deceiving because what ends up happening in our budget is there's years when we don't use much and there's years when we do. When we do need more, we typically at any given time have salary surplus money. So we'll come in when we do our shuffle and try to repurpose that money. In this case, Maureen was looking at what we were, you know, what we have in the queue for next year. And there's not a lot of kind of smaller infrastructure projects where we may need to pull from this line item. So we all felt that it was appropriate and okay to reduce that number.
What if you need it during the year? You need?
Historically, we would come back to the city council and ask to repurpose salary surplus money towards that.
Okay.
What about gasoline, Josh? I saw gasoline and computer supplies. Gasoline looks in line with other years, so you spent $9,000 to date. You know, you've got 3 months left in the fiscal year. You've only spent $9,000, but you're budgeting $25,000 for next year. Is there gonna be a spike over the next 3 months in gasoline?
Sometimes what we often see is there's a bit of a delay in kind of DPW billing us for our gasoline usage.
Okay.
So I'm guessing what this is we get billed quarterly. We probably didn't pick up. We probably only have 2 quarters. We haven't picked up the last quarter.
Okay. And what about computer? You guys doing something different with computers?
So computer, you're talking about computer supplies?
Yeah.
Yes. I believe that is an increase because we are looking to get a CAD computer. We have a number of folks on our end that are very capable when it comes to CAD, and a lot of the design that we're working with comes in CAD form, so it's easier for us to be able to work with designers if we have that ability.
Okay, and just real quick, jumping over to page 6, same thing with natural gas. You've only spent half the money on natural gas through the first 9 months of the fiscal year, but is it another situation of... Yeah.
This is custodial surplus building, so this would be for
not a lot of money. I'm just curious why that was. It's in line, the recommended amount's in line with what you spent, but you've only spent $5,000 through 9 months.
On this one, what I would assume, I know we reduced it for a couple reasons. One, our actual consumption is down, but also our cost actually is projected to come down. But I'll look into this and get back to you guys.
It's not a lot of money, but I was just in that same fashion that Susan was. I was going through looking at a number of things. Just curious about that.
Mm.
So it's through basically through 9 months. So
yeah,
I was looking to see what you're doing that last.
It also could be a delay in getting the bills. The utility companies, they're very quick to bill you if you're a homeowner or a business, but the municipalities, I guess, for whatever reason, can take a back seat.
All right. Thank you.
So I was wondering what's going on in terms of, we got that memo that Mike Cronin is now working for you. Is that, or can you explain how that's all going to work out?
Can I just tell
him?
Well,
I don't mean the mayor's letter about
the
organization of buildings, right?
Well, that's my docket item. I'm looking
forward to
that coming up, but
I don't know about
the mayor has moved the school personnel into a city council.
The mayor made a recommendation, I believe, to the school committee that one of the ways it could potentially improve efficiency and also potentially save money would be to transfer school operations under the building department.
Right.
Beyond that, all I can say is it's a decision above my pay grade. It's not a lot that I can say on that front.
I noticed that the OPEB contribution has gone down, not by much, by 1,800, but page 5. under fringe benefits. Are we, you know, we're trying to get OPEB under control, and it just seems that unusual that we would be reducing it by anything. Was there a decision there to, in 2017 it was 8,900, year to date it's 42, and we're recommending 7,000.
So, it's going up. Yeah. It's overall, it's trending up.
Well, in 2017, it was almost 1,400, and the recommended 2018 is 4,000.
That's year to date. I'm on page 5.
Oh, I'm on the wrong page.
You're on the
7,000 now.
Yeah, 7,000.
So where were you on page 5?
Yeah, right here.
On the fringe benefits.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's not down by much, but I would think that we'd be trying to edge it up rather than edge it down.
Depends on how many people you have.
But yeah, now, fringe
employees within that particular
fringe benefit.
So for instance,
for whom?
So we got a lot of grass in here. We've hired a couple new employees. When you have somebody that retires and you get new employees, their costs are lower.
Okay. So it's the I see.
Under municipal building maintenance. So
we're not necessarily losing ground there just because.
No, I can guarantee you that we are funding OPEB always at the previous year's rate, and if not that, it's increased.
Increase.
So it's got to be, you know, the hiring or.
Our
percentage is not going down.
And the new employees put more in.
And a question about the CAD/CAM computer. How do we now read plans if we don't have a computer that reads plans?
So we read in PDF is the most common way. The problem is with PDF, you can try to, if you have editor, you can make some tweaks to it, but it really doesn't then rewrite back to CAD. Whereas with CAD, we can manipulate a set of plans and send it back. It's not something that we would typically ever do on a large school project, but when you're working on something smaller, a good example would be if we wanted to play with the site over at Elliott when we're doing master planning, we could edit something on the fly. Yeah,
makes sense. And how much is that computer?
So the IT department is thinking it's going to be somewhere around $4,000 between not only the computer, but the licensing and everything that comes with it.
Goodbye.
So, design selection committee, do you know offhand how many members should there be on the committee?
I think nine.
All right, so there was only five, remember? There was only five of them.
Yeah.
So we just spent a couple nights with them, and there's only five, and I asked a couple of them, who else isn't here, and they said, this is it. So, right, well, but there's like, there may be as many as four. So my point is that they're overworked and underpaid. We need to find out, you know, like which spots are not filled. And if it's us, you know, we could try and get it filled right away. Because literally, you know, we met back to back, and this is just on Crescent Street, and they're working on all this other stuff. And they ought to have more staff. I mean, they ought to have more representatives, and I think they only have five right now. So if you could find out how many there could be and who's missing, then maybe we can help get those spots filled.
I'll give you the DRC too, because I know we're missing them.
Yeah, I don't know. And you know, that's probably the same case.
I think
it's the process
we could have something.
I think that's right.
Well, somebody left.
Okay. We got some
vacancies
there.
Oh, okay. Well, talk about that later.
Yeah.
Roy is the only one who does it. Yeah.
What?
Dory?
Yeah.
Dory has mentioned she's been the person in ill. So Dory is doing all the boards and commissions. And we do have a chart that you guys all have of all the boards and commissions with the number of positions they're supposed to be filled. What we don't have is what who's missing or not.
How long is David does the board, the council?
What?
How long has Dory been doing this work?
How long has Dory been doing it? Apparently for a while, because that just came up when we were complaining about the dispersion of one of these. So she's doing it. There was a lot of work for her to go through and appoint, and she did the best she can.
And the person whose job it is to help,
she's all the half hour.
And we can't hire some new person.
But actually, is a great segue. Just real quickly, I want to mention with the DRC. One of the things that the committee is going to do, we are working with them on a document that we will present to public facilities regarding not only sustainability and how we design, but also integrated design. And real quickly, what integrated design is when you're making tweaks to an existing design, you need to make sure that you're following through all the ripple effects that that causes. For instance, if you have a better envelope, meaning more energy efficient. You don't need as much heating and cooling equipment to heat and cool the building. If you have smaller HVAC equipment, it weighs less. If it weighs less, it's less structural steel. If it's less structural steel, it compacts the building, which reduces the size of the envelope. If it's smaller, it consumes less electricity, which means smaller electrical runs, smaller electrical panels, smaller electrical service, smaller emergency generators. It is a different approach that some people are using in different capacities, and it's an area in which we are currently using it quite a bit on all of our large projects. But I really think it's an opportunity in working with the Design Review Committee to kind of memorialize not only what we are doing, but what we want to be doing going forward. I just want to make sure folks realize it is not purely about energy. It is about building the best building that you can.
And in that thing, we're going to be having that discussion. I think public buildings and the Design Review Committee are going to be presenting us with a sort of a policy statement, and we're going to take it up either our first or second meeting in June. And especially with some really thoughtful work that's been done. I have a couple questions.
No, I was just going to ask another question about facilities. So, Josh, I don't know if it was last budget season or the budget season before. I remember at this table we had a long conversation about City Hall bathrooms.
Yeah.
Did you see that coming out?
There is something in the
idea. Oh, something about the mail.
I hope so, because I remember, maybe it was last year. I don't remember, but I just know that you got into some great detail about tile work and how you're trying to keep them clean and you can't. And
yeah.
I haven't seen any improvement.
By the way, the bathrooms in the library, you did a good job.
Thank you.
Really good job.
Yeah, we got a lot of praise for that. Folks love them. And also the bathrooms we did in the Wool Memorial. Those came out really good.
Absolutely.
You know, and it was good because I was able to take a few folks on the staff side down there to see what the other bathrooms could be. Yeah, exactly. It's very difficult to keep toilet paper and paper towel in stock down there. Put it that way.
So what number are we looking at?
Once I find it, it's going to be City Hall Plumbing. What it's under. Right there, number 143. And the weight down.
All right.
So that's not getting down.
Hmm. No, he doesn't
want
to talk about that.
No, it's at the public hearing.
I remember we talked about it a bunch of years ago, and there's a lot of people going through this building on a daily basis, and not to mention the employees. So I just think that, cosmetically, they can be improved. I mean, you need to detail about how it's hard to keep, even though you're keeping them clean, it doesn't look clean because of the condition.
Yeah.
So, for the amount of money, I don't know if that could be moved up the priority scale based on, this is done on priority and risk, the amount of people that are going through this building on a daily basis, day and night. I think that that might be something to move up higher on the priority list.
I will carry that message back.
Yeah. That's a great segue for my couple of questions, actually. So I probably say this every year, but I'm going to say it again for the record. I'm on page 5. I'm under debt and capital. And then there's, item 5825, building improvements. That $150,000 that,
page 5, bottom.
Page 5, bottom.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Debt and capital. So $150,000, that's the amount that, and it's flatlined. So, you know, we haven't raised that amount in the 8 years I've been sitting here. And that's for public building maintenance, materials for public building maintenance. Related question is, last year you talked to us a lot about reallocating the percentage of time that laborers and tradesmen and so forth spend in school versus municipal buildings. And so I wonder if you could talk about all that, because clearly our under $75,000 capital items are, you know, there's millions of dollars of work that's been identified, and you can't catch up with it for $150,000 a year plus some amount of in-house labor. So it's just been a concern for a long time that, you know, we have a lot of not outstanding work orders, but there's identified work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the public bathrooms, I think maybe you are thinking of doing some modest upgrades for under $75,000. But could you just sort of wrap that all together?
Sure. So I just want to clarify. I think the less than $150,000 has only been in my budget for 2 or 3 years. It was just recently put in there.
I remember it from 8 years ago, but maybe it was called something else. I don't know.
Yeah, there's always been repair and maintenance.
Yeah.
And that's up above the 52,407. This one, I think, and actually if you look down, you can see in FY 15 and 16, it was zero. So it is a relatively recent addition to my budget.
Oh, okay.
So the one above is for day-to-day maintenance and operations, roof, you know, roof repairs, masonry repairs,
okay,
heating repairs. The $150,000 is for items that are less than $75,000 but greater than one would normally fund out of just day-to-day maintenance.
Got it.
So
you get to do two projects.
Or maybe 3 or 4, depending on how big each one is. You know, bathroom, for example, I think it's $130,000. That would be essentially, if I did it all, which we don't necessarily need to, we could start to pick away at it. It would close to wipe that out. But
what if we spend the $129 on, if I may?
Oh, the last round of less than 75 projects. Yep, we spent a good amount of money on the council chairs.
Mm-hmm. not on mine.
Not yet.
It's coming. We did the cupola restoration of City Hall. That was a chronic issue of water getting in. We finally got that completely buttoned up and tight. So that one I was really excited to get done. We did some security projects over at police. This is not the camera project that you guys approved, but it's the access control upgrades. We're getting a lot of our buildings. You'll see this in police and fire and a lot of our municipal buildings. It's not just cameras, it's a lot of access control work where we know who's coming and going. The problem right now is that, you know, people retire, they don't always get to keep back. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to control security in our buildings. And especially when you're talking about public safety buildings. So really, I look forward to the day when they're completely on access control where you know who's coming and going. So we did that. I would say the most of what we did was envelope work with this last round of less than 75. And then a little bit of kind of painting restoration. This next round, the previous round, we also did the carpet in the comptroller's office. So that got done. That carpet was old and passed its useful life. kind of big difference.
Let's get back to the old sort of overview and talk about how you're deploying staff and
sure.
How you're able to work through these items.
Yeah, but that, so the staff is a little more challenging. So I know last year there was a desire to try to balance it out a little more where we're putting more of the craftsman time working on the city side in our municipal building. The challenge of that is, if I do that, it means that more work has to be contracted out, which means that schools need more money in charter maintenance. So I have to pick between, you know, getting as much work done in schools as I can as compared to getting work done in, say, a DPW building. And in reality, when stuff comes in, you know, day-to-day work orders, a roof leak in a garage, a DPW garage, is not going to take priority over a roof leak in a kindergarten classroom. It just isn't. Or if a roof goes out in a kindergarten classroom versus, you know, the DPW garage, I have to prioritize the kindergarten classroom. You know,
those aren't always the choices, though.
Those aren't always the choices. No, but, you know, we don't, you know, so the our craftsmen don't do a lot of cosmetic work. A lot of it is just day-to-day maintenance. So, and a lot of it is responding to issues as they arise. We have tried to make an effort to do more work in some of our municipal buildings. I think a lot of it is going to, that going back to how we started tonight, that floating custodian, I think, is going to be valuable because it's a set of eyes and ears in our buildings that can start to identify issues, you know, before they become larger issues, which then we can utilize our staff to try to make those fixes. You know, for instance, a roof leak, if you catch it when it's small, it's a quick fix. If you don't catch it, it can end up being a very large fix. So, you know, I continue to try to push to balance the amount of time we spend on schools versus municipal buildings, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that, you know, from a macro perspective, there's a finite amount of resources, and if I take from one, there's push and pull. So
you had a target last year, and I'm trying to remember what it was. I think you were trying to get it down to 75% for schools.
I think so,
yeah.
Right, it was 25.
Yeah, and I didn't find it in here yet. If it is in here.
I think it was, I don't think that was actually in here. I think it was a verbal discussion.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
And so where would you say you are?
I think we're probably closer to be quite honest, we're probably low 80s to 20s as far as the ratio. So we've moved the needle, but, you know, I know last year we talked about trying to get it to 50-50. I don't know if that's realistic, just based on what I said before. Just, you know, every day I get anywhere from 40 to 120 work orders, and the vast majority of them are schools, and I have to prioritize. I just do.
So you think that it's unrealistic to probably get it down below that number. And I guess, I don't want to belabor it, but I mean, I just have this feeling when we talk about the bathrooms here that there's certain things that are never going to get done because we just don't have the people power to do it.
Well, the bathrooms are a prime example. So aside from my painter, that's about all we would really, I mean, the plumber could tackle some of that, change out fixtures, but the epoxy flooring, that's a contractor. The bathroom partitions, that's a contractor. We just can't do that. It's all manufactured, it's a specialized trade. You know, the electricians could change lights out, but that's not where the real cost is. But the bathrooms over at the library, the cost really is in the flooring and the partitions. The toilets and paint lights end up being 5% of the project budget. So
what's in the CIT, $130,000? Is that a realistic number? Can you do what you need to do here?
If we're just doing partitions and epoxy floor and paint, yes. The challenge that I need to look at is fixture count and the plumbing code, because the plumbing code, if you do a project like that, you have to evaluate the building under worst-case scenarios, what's the maximum number of people that could be in the building at any given time. And in a building like City Hall, with different events, that could be a massive number. And the plumbing code requires you to build to the max. Just folks probably are aware, Duke North High School and the Seven Chambers.
Anything.
So that's something I have to be cognizant of.
Can we get a waiver of that or not?
You can apply.
Now that we added all those bathrooms Memorial Hall, I mean, doesn't that help our...
But what triggers that? What level, either a percentage? No, but if you...
I know what you're asking. So what triggers it is if I replace in kind, I'm not triggering that. So if I do, mm-hmm. if I just replace the toilet, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
If I make minor upgrades, whether it be finishes or partitions, I'm okay. The part that I need to evaluate is if I need to make a change to make it ADA compliant based on the actual layout of the bathroom, there's a point at which it's considered a significant alteration, mm-hmm. and in that case, it would trigger evaluating the plumbing count. So that's the only thing that I'd have to confirm before I officially say that that money will cover that.
But we have separate accessible bathrooms, though, don't we?
We do. But we also, so I need to look into not only the plumbing code, but the ADA code, and not just ADA, but the access, MAAD, so it's because they all have different requirements. And what, in one code, it might say that if you have independent accessible bathrooms, you're okay. Others may say each bathroom must have an accessible stall.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look into all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we're interested in you looking into it, sounds like to me. Also, we know where we can go.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that if this committee felt unanimously and very strongly that for the reasons that you mentioned about how the public uses this building, that these spaces should be upgraded, we can try and do that. We go to the administration and ask for, that in effect it be moved up and it could get added to the supplemental. And it could be just alternate funding. You've talked about the health insurance holiday for the school department. Well, we're also getting a health insurance holiday. We're not going to get $1.2 million like the school, but we're going to get probably maybe even as much as $800,000. Because we're not half the size. We're probably, like, three quarters or whatever. So, I mean, there's money. And if that's something that the committee wanted to do, all I'm asking is that you do it now so it's done for the hearing on May the 1st. I don't want to get into, listen, let's move up number 142 because then Brian Yates is going to raise his hand and say, well, I think number 177 is a good thing. We should move that up. I mean, that's not going to be a good thing. So, if you want, we can approach the administration and say, listen, committee feels very strongly that this has been put off long enough and it's a public building and we ought to do the upgrade. That's how you try and do it.
I got it. Can we take a shot? Does anybody want to?
What do you think? What's this?
I'll move that we have Josh look into the cost.
I was going to mention this here. Like Josh said, there's 517.5 in here for the self indoor track, and it's going to be what, 300. So I mean, there's also.
Right.
There's probably ways of doing it in what's already existing. So,
let me just ask you a couple questions if I could. So, doing some minor upgrades sounds like would help a lot. Replacing fixtures in place would help a lot. Plumbing codes, it sounds to me, might be what partly gets in your way. Not use codes, but... when you've done bathrooms in other buildings, for example, the Ed Center,
mm-hmm.
I think you told me you spent $250,000 on one bathroom at one point. And I'm guessing that's because you've got these old buildings and old plumbing that isn't vented properly or whatever. I think, is there more that you have to look into, even just to replace fixtures and upgrade stalls and put epoxy on the floor, or do you feel like the building well enough, that's not hard work?
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. The only thing I need to confirm is accessibility and the plumbing code.
And that's what, I mean, don't you just basically just get, put your request in up the hall and they decide if it's...
Yeah, it was with me on the accessibility and John Lojack and the plumbing inspectors for the code.
Okay.
I'm not going to take this to the plumbers Union if I don't have to, because I know where that's going to go.
Yes, we do. Well, just as a show of hands, how many folks think this should be a priority? Mm.
Capital improvement plan, finance shares it, so, but anybody else that wants to second the idea or third the idea, fine, the more the merrier.
Everyone here should write one email. That reminds me of one last item.
The thing is, what I will do is say, look, you can lower this track and stick this in here, and you don't even have to add anything else.
I've heard at least where the money will come from.
So I wanted to get back to your first item about water at Newton North High School. Because, so you're saying how the water bill is so high. And plumbing codes seem to be stuck with a very old school board in the state.
Mm-hmm.
But when we built Newton North High School, the idea was to use gray water
mm-hmm.
inside the building to flush the toilets, and all the infrastructure is in place for that, except we were not allowed to hook it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. At this time, do you think there's a chance that we could go to the plumbing board and make a case with the previous administration, or with the next? Do we have to wait for the next administration and say, look, you know, two administrations ago there was a terrible mistake made?
But we'll never win with the plumbing board. I'll just be fine.
Somebody has to die first. I mean, seriously, it's such a silly rule.
The plumbing board is made up of owners of plumbing outfits. You're never going to win that because it's precedent setting too. It's not safe if you can't get anybody naked. You just have to use plumbers to do it.
The issue wasn't that it wouldn't be allowed if we had asked. The issue was that we didn't ask. And we won't be using union plumbers.
Right.
Yeah, we'll be expensive.
We're using union plumbers for what?
One specific hookup to one part of the North High School.
We haven't had a lot of
that. Crazy rules for the plumbing work.
I tell you what, so we don't belabor the point. What I will do is I will get you guys the annual water consumption cost over at Newton North High School, and I can get you a ballpark cost to hook it up. We won't get the plumbing board to deviate. It's not a chance. I've asked the question numerous. Every year when I get the water bills, I ask the same question. And the plumbers downstairs laugh at me.
Just find out what it's cost to hook it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Alright.
So, just one more question on water and leaking. What's with the reservoir? Did you ever figure out? Well, that's not your
idea. No, I don't know.
That's
on the Manor Road?
No, yeah, well, I don't know if it was
in the room now, wasn't it? No,
okay,
that's CCW.
That's CCW, okay. So that's not the water you're talking about.
No,
that's the water. Okay, that's
all CCW. Yeah.
Got it.
But we haven't had an update on that, and that was like a year ago.
We do a straw vote. Yeah. So, are we done discussing the public building budget and CIP? We're done talking about budget and CIP for buildings and straw vote. We have straw vote to approve. Great.
We
have one more item. And there's material in the packet, and we also have, folks, are you ready?
Yep.
We also have a handout on this item, too, that you should have gotten when you sat down. This is item 113-17, His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend $528,423 exactly from the Energy Stabilization Fund to a dedicated account for the Newton Public Schools Energy Efficiency Project. I'm going to ask Joshua, can you give the big picture first on this and then talk about the particulars?
Yeah, so in the interest of time, I can provide it in summary. I have a flash drive here with 124 pages of technical specifications.
No, thank you.
Come on. Joe Ferguson was convinced because I did all one of
the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one. Yeah. So this could have the first time
So, in big picture, we're changing lights at Newton North High School. It's a lot of lights because it's a very big building. Why didn't we do LED lights at the time? The technology wasn't quite there. And specifically, the drivers essentially what caused the lights to come on and off. I'm glad that we didn't because a lot of the LEDs that were installed at that time, specifically the larger light fixtures, failed pretty quickly because the drivers, the technology just wasn't there, and they were integral, meaning that you had to replace the entire fixture when they failed. So a lot of communities got burnt big time on LEDs. But that said, all the existing lights, and I know this sounds crazy, are starting to fail because they're reaching the end of their useful life. Yes, Newton North High School is a few years back now. 7 years since we opened, and that's about when you start to see failure of fluorescence. So, big picture, what we're doing is we're changing out the fixture from fluorescent to LED. In almost all cases, we are reducing the electrical consumption by 50%.
Wow.
So you go from an 80-watt fixture to a 40-watt fixture, or 150-watt to a 75-watt. Like I said, it's a big number, and I don't want to downplay that, but there's not a lot to talk about other than it's occupancy sensors, changing out lights and light bulbs, and then lastly is working with the fire department, because as everybody's heard, the lights are always on at Newton North High School. Well, the fire prevention at the time felt like if we couldn't guarantee there was nobody in the building, that all emergency lights had to stay on. The emergency lights are a third of all the lights in the building. I have yet to find any code which says that, but the fire code allows the fire departments themselves. There's like a caveat at the end that they can basically imply almost, or they can make you do almost anything. We have different fire departments, different fire prevention. Occupancy sensors are much more reliable. I really think that we're going to be fine in working with the fire department, such that egress ways are lit up with the occupancy sensors. We can make them as sensitive as they want, so that if one of the dozen or so night custodians needs to run out of the building, they'll be able to get there. The only other thing that I'd like to point out is that if you look at the summary sheet, the total customer cost is $652,199. The request is for $528 and change. We will not, with the existing money, be able to complete all of the work. What we're looking to do is all the interior light fixtures and occupancy sensors. The exterior lighting upgrade is approximately $115,000, which is about the delta from what we currently are asking for. The plan is, Zervas is going to open in about a month and change. All those rebates is going to total about $118,000. So those should hit, I would think, in June. So I think we might try to get into one of your summer meetings to appropriate that money. The good news is that that's all exterior LED light work. So even if we had to do that in the fall, we wouldn't be working around the kids in the building.
So I was concerned about having the entire project budget as opposed to just the 528, and this is great that Joe put this together for tonight. But I did understand that the rebates were going to be sufficient to do all the work at the school. But what you're saying is that the exterior work is exactly the amount of the rebate?
Yeah, it's almost exactly. So Zervas, I believe, the total rebate, based on what we got for Anger, it should be about $118,000, and the exterior LED lighting is
$115,000. Great. Because, it seems crazy to stage the buildings to do all this work and then not finish it.
Yeah.
Once it's a three-year payback.
But I will have to come back to the committee for that money. Mm-hmm. You can't authorize money that isn't in there yet.
Well, easier. I think this sounds great.
Okay, so we will be able to complete this project one way or we're not going to not do $2,000 worth of work.
And I'd like to point out that if you look at the energy savings, between that and the maintenance savings, it's almost $200,000 a year that we're helping the school department, which currently, if folks didn't realize, is struggling with this.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any motion for this?
Any other questions?
I have
this
class,
so
I don't know.
Motion to approve and not to approve the
program. Yeah, motion to
approve. Motion to approve. All in favor? There we go. Great. Thank you so much.
Great.
Sure,
thank you.
You are adjourned at 9:04.
Thank you, Jeff. Who's going to get these back to